back in February of this year, we invited you, our wonderful, enthusiastic community, to be part of the Plan Strong Test Kitchen and provide us with feedback around our all-new burger mixes. And I got to tell you, the feedback and support that you guys showed us blew us away, and we have been hard at work in the kitchen, and we now have our first program graduates, three delicious skillet burger mixes. We're going to be launching them into the universe so you can stock up ahead of Memorial Day weekend. You can check them out at planstrong.com. The three flavors are black bean, portobello mushroom, and our all-new sweet curry. Once mixed with 6 to 7 ounces of water or broth, the dough may be pan-fried, air-fried, or baked to a crispy, aromatic, rich golden brown. These mixes, they take the hard work out of making healthy burgers at home and yield quality, quality results. They're whole grain, oil-free, a great source of protein and fiber, and they're made from a combination of ground oats, beans, seeds, and spices without any of the added sugar or excessive salt. I want to thank all of you for being such an important part of the Plant Strong Test Kitchen, and I know that you're going to love these as much as I do. Thanks so much. Support for this episode of Plant Strong is brought to you by Nutrimilk, the fastest, easiest, and most economical way to make your own plant-based milk on the planet. You simply throw in your walnuts, almonds, cashews, oats, or whatever milk you're in the mood for, and voila. In addition to making plant-based milks, the Nutrimilk can make nut butters, sauces, dips, veggie stocks, spreads, smoothies, you name it. Visit thenutrimilk.com and type in the code PLANTSTRONG to receive a $50 discount and free shipping on your purchase. Hey, Plant Strong friends, we're picking up right where we left off. And in this second part of the two-part episode with Chad Sarno, we're digging even deeper into practical tips and recipe development that is going to take your cooking to the next level. Grab your pen and paper and let's go.
There's a world of food and opportunity out there that people are not exploring because of their own fears, right? Mm-hmm. So I think going plant-based in general makes people more of a foodie, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
Because
right.
you're forced to try new things, you know, yeah. which is great. You know, I don't know what the question was.
Well, we were going back to appliances yep. that are kind of, you know, you really need. So you mentioned the wok, the cast iron, the high-speed blender,
a good knife.
Cutting board, and then you were talking about the knife.
Yeah, a good knife. So, you know, the key is like is always, you know, knife safety. You can certainly chop up a bunch of vegetables, you know, quickly, but are you doing it correctly? Are you going to cut yourself? You know, all mm-hmm. that. Most people have cuts because of dull knife. So make sure your tip, just a couple quick tips here. Knife tip is always pointing towards a board. Okay. Whether you're cutting cabbage, a head of kale, or dicing a carrot. Okay. A lot of people hold it up as you're cutting like this. Okay. Whereas the tip of the knife, if you slip, you hit the board with the knife before you hit your fingers. Right.
Right.
Next thing is always keep the tip of your fingertips down. So if you're cutting, your hand's not flat on the board as you're cooking right. because that's basically your fingers are vegetables at that point. Right? Right. So tip of your fingertips down and your thumb is behind your fingertips. So God. a lot of people will do this, and then first thing, I've cut my thumb so many times when I was going through this process, but tip of the knife pointing down, and then really you're using your fingertips down. That's it.
And then are you using the knife against
and then once you get comfortable with doing that, then yeah. you're using your knuckles as sort of a guide.
Right.
And you can do that slowly and go slowly, and it'll just slowly start, you know, yeah. speeding up. Yeah. It takes a little bit of time. And the key, we were talking about fears too, is one thing that stresses people out typically is the prep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And the prep is Once you have everything in place, cooking is so easy. The basic advice that I give anybody that's starting to cook is make sure that you set yourself up with mise en place before every dish.
With what?
It's called mise en place. It's prep. Mise en place literally translates in a kitchen to setting in place.
Okay.
It's a French term. It's setting in place. And so it's basically, when I talk about mise en place, we call it mise in the kitchen. So it's basically when you're mising your recipe. So you basically will take, let's go through a typical home of people making dinner. Okay.
Yeah.
This is pretty typical. Let's say you're making stir fry and rice. Okay. With a sauce. All right. That's all you're making. Right. That's stressful for a lot of people to even think of that. Because it's stressful because going through this scenario, you decide you want to make a stir fry and rice. Okay. So you start chopping, you pull out all these vegetables out of the fridge that you know you want to chop and that you should be eating because it's good for you, right? So you start chopping the vegetables, you know, not efficiently, right? Because you're not sure how to use knives. You start chopping the vegetables. You turn on the pan, all right? So you're chopping the vegetables. Your pan starts smoking. You're like, oh shit, I gotta get the onions in. So then you start chopping the onions, okay? You're chopping them. Then you put the onions in. You realize that you need to put on the rice. So then you've got to go to the cupboard while the onions are cooking. They're starting to smoke. You go to the cupboard, you get the grains, you start measuring things out to put in a pan to make the rice.
Right.
And then your vegetables are still all over the board while the onions are starting to burn.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh man, when I add these vegetables, I'm going to need a sauce. So then you're rummaging through your cabinets to get the sauce. And so then your vegetables are finally in, your onions are burnt, you're stirring it, your rice is starting to boil. You don't know how to turn it down.
It's getting out of hand.
It's getting out of hand. It's getting stressful, right? And so that's a typical, like, that's a typical mindset of cooking is just, you gotta, like, you have to do a little pre-planning in your mind. And when I never ever turn on a pan unless my prep is done. So it's literally setting in place. So if I'm making a stir fry, I will turn on the rice first. You think of timing. So what's going to take the longest to cook?
Right.
Okay. I'll turn on the rice before I do anything. Okay. So that's going to take 40 minutes, 35 minutes. That's how much time it's going to be for everything else to happen. So that way, once I finish stir fry, rice is done. Right. Whereas it's not a second thought, you know, so rice is on. I'll prep all my broccoli. I'll prep all my carrots, then I'll prep all my onions. I'll prep all my garlic. I'll prep all my ginger and, you know, or cube tofu. And so then I'll turn on a pan. Mm-hmm. Once everything's on my board, ready to go. If there's a sauce that goes with it, I'll mix it in a little jar. I have these little, like, you know, half quart mason mm-hmm. jars. Mm-hmm. I mix all my sauce in there.
So can I stop you for a sec?
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned sauces like mm-hmm. Joe Inga, the Bronx firefighter. Mm-hmm. He has created this sauce that he puts on all of his pasta. Mm-hmm. It's like a combination of boiled potatoes, onions, carrots, and then he throws it in the Vitamix and he puts in like some garlic, mm-hmm. I think herb spices, mm-hmm. nutritional yeast,
mm-hmm.
and he puts it on pasta and his 2-year-old and 5-year-old just can't mm-hmm. get enough of it.
Oh, that sounds great.
But though, I'd love for you to come back to what you're talking about, but sauces are an integral part mm-hmm. of making this work,
completely.
Right?
Sauces, marinades, and dressings.
All that. Yeah. I mean, do you have 3 go-to sauces that you recommend to people?
Yeah, so for an Asian one, if I'm making a stir fry, going back to that, for an Asian one, I use soy sauce. So I'll use a low-sodium soy sauce. Low-sodium soy sauce, I'll use a sweetener.
Like
okay,
what?
So maple syrup? A date paste, maple syrup.
Okay.
I'll put that in. Then I'll use a vinegar. Okay. So you're working with the salt, the sweet, and the acid.
Yeah.
Okay. Fats are not always needed. That's the thing. I'll add cashews to our stir fry just to get that fat in there if I need it.
When you say you add cashews, you mean the whole cashews into the dish.
The whole cashews. Right? Yeah. I mean, whole cashews, whole almonds. I put nuts in my stir fry. Right. I love it. My kids love it, you know. Right.
What kind of vinegar are you putting in there?
So you can use rice vinegar. Yeah. Rice vinegar. Also, you can use, if you're using a seasoned vinegar, just make sure that there's some seasoned vinegars that don't have sugar in them. So mm-hmm. you can choose those. Mirin is really good, but mirin tends to have sugar in them.
Yeah.
But a rice vinegar works great. And so you're basically balancing out that salt, that acid, and that sweet. Uh-huh. Okay. I put it in a jar. You can put some minced garlic, some minced ginger in there. Shake it up. That's ready to go with stir fry. That's ready to go on rice or whatever.
Okay.
So that's one of my favorites. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The other one is, I for richness, I like a peanut sauce.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll use, and then you'll need a blender for this, or you can use a jar and you just shake it like crazy. But, you do peanut butter or almond butter or cashew butter.
Yeah.
Okay. And then same thing, working with fat, salt, acid, and sweet. So then you build from there. So peanut butter, almond butter.
What's my salt going to be?
low sodium tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Not much. You don't need much at all.
What's my sweetener going to be?
The sweetener is going to be either maple syrup or dates. And that recipe in particular, dates work really well.
Okay.
Okay. Just a couple pitted dates.
What's my acid going to be?
Acid, lime juice, or vinegar. Or a combination. And then you add a little bit of water so it'll blend, you know. And then from there, once you have the fat, the salt, the acid, and the sweet, okay, that's your sauce. And then you, everything on top of that is aromatics and is different layers. So a lot of people, if you try a recipe that you make a sauce and it just doesn't cut it and it doesn't work and it is something missing, it might be missing one of those components. That's the sort of foundation of building these recipes, right? And then from there, then you can add the aromatics. You can add the ginger, you can add the chili, you can add the herbs, you can add the spices, and those are going to give you another flavor on top of that foundation.
So that's two. So you gave me the stir fry and then you gave me kind of a
peanut
Thai
sauce, peanut sauce. Third? Yeah, third one I would say would be, see, I like richness. You don't do a ton of nuts and seeds, but like a cream sauce. I love a cream sauce with pasta. So you can do, I'll do cauliflower a lot of times. You said Joe uses potatoes, right?
Yeah.
So I'll do cauliflower. I'll just put it in a little pot and I'll do cauliflower. I'll do a little bit of cashews in it. I'll do a whole onion. You chop it all up. You put it in a pot with a little bit of vegetable stock, and then you can add a touch of miso in there.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you could add some salt if you want. You cook that, you boil it until everything's tender, that's reduced the liquid, and then I add that to a blender and you blend that up, and it's an amazing cream sauce.
And it's the same process.
And what would I put that on? Pasta, all sorts of pastas.
Right.
So I'll make a cauliflower risotto that's just cauliflower. So that's my sauce, that's my creaminess, and then I'll dice up a bunch of cauliflower. And then I'll mince up a bunch of cauliflower. Like, it's crazy. Right. It's the only ingredient is cauliflower in there, and it'll fool anybody, you know?
Yeah. Do you have a go-to salad dressing that you would recommend for people?
Yes. I like to use the combination of orange juice and a white miso is amazing.
Just those two ingredients?
Those two is really good because you're getting the sweetener. The only thing that's missing is the fat.
Can you tell me ratios on that if somebody wants to make this after they
hear
this?
Yeah, I mean, you could do I would say it's probably 3 tablespoons of a white miso, a half cup of orange juice, and then you can build from there, you know? So, and that's nice, a nice, super sweet dressing. Another one is if I'm doing like a balsamic dressing, I'll do balsamic, and you can add a little bit of the sweetener in there being a little bit of maple, and you can also add a little bit of salt being a little bit of low sodium tamari, and those three combination is really nice.
One of the things Joe wanted me to ask you was he loves pesto. What is a good no oil pesto? How would you make that?
No oil pesto, I use pine nuts, so I'll use a good amount of pine nuts or any kind of nut works really well. I don't tend to use, you can use water to flash it, but just so it'll blend a little bit, but plenty of basil. I like to use spinach in my basil, a little bit just to really brighten it up in terms of color.
Yeah.
So I use some, maybe half and half even, some toasted pine nuts. Okay. So if you're going to use any kind of nuts or seeds, toast them, right? It's going to give a little bit more flavor. And then rather than using even garlic, just straight raw garlic, because pesto tends to be a little sharp with garlic. Mm. You can boil a bunch of garlic. If you boiled a bunch of garlic in a little bit of water, you boiled it, and you had that on hand, you can basically take that garlic and with the back of a knife, you can squish it on a cutting board.
How long do I boil it for?
Until it's soft, maybe 4 minutes, 5 minutes.
Okay.
Simmer it just in a little bit of water, and that's it.
And then throw that in with my...
And you can keep that in the fridge. So whenever you're making dressings or sauces or salads, or if you're making, you know, a grain salad, a bean salad, just slicing up some cooked garlic is really, really nice. Mm. So I'll take a little bit of garlic and I'll smush it, or I'll just put the whole, you know, blanched garlic in the pesto. If you need a little bit of liquid, you could use a splash of water or a splash of vegetable stock if you're not reaching for oil. So
Joe also, he likes eggplant cutlets.
Mm-hmm.
What would you recommend as an egg substitute for like battering if you're making cutlets?
So if you're looking at, yeah, so I love like an eggplant parmesan, right? So a couple ways to do that. Typically with that, you would dredge them, right? You would do an egg wash, then you would do the batter, right? Well, the breading, right? So for an egg wash, you could basically use any starch, any like tapioca starch or corn starch or anything like that. You can whisk that up with a little bit of water.
Okay,
that's totally fine. You can also use that cream sauce that I said. If he's doing that cream sauce of potato,
yeah,
he can just dilute it a little bit. Okay. And the key is before you add an egg wash, okay, you want to also be able to, you add it to flour first. So there's three stages when it comes to dredging. Okay. So you basically do the plain.
Is that dredging you said?
Yeah. It's just the process of breading.
Okay.
So you basically would take like sliced eggplant planks, let's say, right?
And then would I want to do that thing like I do with mushrooms to get the water out? Would that help?
You could, but with eggplant parmesan, I don't usually do that. Yeah. So I'll take sliced eggplant like planks or whatever.
Because I want you to know something. I can't stand eggplant.
You can't.
Do you think you could make me like eggplant?
Oh, I can make you like eggplant, man. I'm growing a ton of eggplants in my garden right now. I have these little Thai eggplants, really small ones, which are amazing in curries and stir fries. But eggplant, dredge it in a little bit of flour, coat it, and then you do the wash. And the wash could be the wash, typically people use eggs, but you could use any kind of like starch water combination, or you can do that diluted sauce, that diluted cauliflower sauce, a diluted potato sauce, just so it basically coats it a little bit, and then you do the breading. You can do a combination of panko or breadcrumbs and different herbs and nutritional yeast and things like and spices, and that's what you bread, and then you bake it, right? It's great, and then you pour sauce all over it and a homemade cream sauce, and you have the best, you know, parmesan. You know, eggplant parmesan. I'm sure Joe would enjoy that.
If you're having a hard time starting or staying the course with a plant-strong lifestyle, and you really want to master the habits and create a sustainable system around your personal healthy eating, I invite you to check out our Plant Strong Meal Planner. I am really pumped up on this platform. It was specifically designed and engineered to solve one very common hurdle we have heard from each and every one of you. How do you make plant-based eating easy, convenient, and delicious? We came up with the solution. We have thousands of plant-strong recipes customized to your personal preferences, integrated grocery delivery to most major metropolitan areas, the ability to create and edit shopping lists, and a team of Engine 2 coaches who are on hand to answer every question from how do you cut a mango in half to how do I begin cooking this way? No matter how silly the question, we are on hand to help. And all of this is available for $1.90 a week when you sign up for a year. We get emails from people every day saying how this has changed their life and it's made going plant-based so much easier. I hope you'll let us help you and your family fall in love with this way of eating. To learn more, sign up at mealplanner.engine2.com or click on the meal planner on our website, engine2.com.
So, Chad, what are three go-to basic meals that you would suggest that everybody learn to master in order to like make this lifestyle work for them?
I think it's going to differ with each person and what traditional flavors that you like. But one of my favorite, I love grains. Yep. I love whole grains. So I get this wild rice from, and I'm going to totally plug this company. It's called Moosehead Lake, but they're up in Minnesota. I get my wild rice from them. And I'll cook a batch of wild rice, or I'll cook a batch of quinoa or a batch of brown rice. And then I'll eat that throughout the week, you know? So rather than exact dishes, because I think this is where a lot of people trip up with making it sustainable, is master a couple techniques. Once you master a couple techniques, then your dishes can vary every day, right?
So what are those techniques?
So those techniques could be exactly how to cook grains. Know how do you cook a good grain. All of them are going to differ slightly, but there's charts out there with, you know, it's
2 to 1
roughly for almost everything.
Water to the grain.
Exactly. Yeah. So cook a good grain, and not just cooking a grain with no seasoning, put a bay leaf in there, put some sliced garlic in there, put some sliced ginger, put a star anise in there, you know, just up the flavor of that grain.
How do you cook your grains? Do you do them in a rice cooker
or just do it
Instapot
in or just in a pot on the stove?
In a pot on the stove.
In a pot on the stove, you bring it to a boil, then you basically put it down to a simmer until you don't see any water anymore. Right. And then for most of my grains, I then shut off the heat and I don't touch it for 10 minutes.
Okay, so let me ask you a couple things about grains. I mean, do you have a go-to? Is it the wild rice? Is it quinoa? Is it pearl barley?
Wild rice.
Wild rice.
Yeah, like a parched, hand harvested wild rice is one of my favorite. You can get those at stores or you can order it from
What about steel cut oats, oat groats, or old fashioned oats?
I like old fashioned oats and just soaking them overnight. I do the whole overnight oat thing, which is kind of nice. Or I do, I've been doing a lot of chia also, chia puddings.
Right.
Because my son loves it. I have a 2 year old, 2.5 year old. So.
Okay. So that's, that's one technique is mastering the grain.
Mastering the grains. Yeah. The other one is, like how to build a dressing. We talked about it of taking those four components, fat, salt, acid, and sweet.
Yeah.
Okay. Once you master that and you have a couple under your belt with knowing that how that works and how those components work, then it can apply to so many categories. So if you're looking at a dressing, we talked about just going real quick back to it. We're talking about that peanut dressing, right? That peanut sauce. If you look at each one of those categories, let's say fat category, you can swap out. If you don't like peanuts, you don't like almonds, use cashews, use tahini. You can swap that out.
Yeah.
If you don't like lime, you don't have access to lemon or citrus, you can use, you could use orange or you could use any kind of vinegar. If you don't like,
do you ever use grapefruit or is that just too?
I use grapefruit. I use grapefruit. Some grapefruit has a little bit of bitterness in it.
Yeah.
But the thing with orange and grapefruit, those could cover two categories. So those could cover acid and sweet. So you get the same thing with olives. Olives are fat and salt. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why that white miso dressing works, because it's white miso is salt and sweet. You know, orange juice is sweet and acidic. So that's why that works with those, just those two ingredients. Mm-hmm. So you can swap out ingredients within each category to make the recipe your own. So when I have some go-tos, my just in terms of recipes, I'll make rice salad almost at least a couple times a week, like a rice avocado salad. Oh, I love it.
So just what do you have in there?
So I'll do like wild rice and you could do it warm or whatever, but I'll make a batch of grain just to have it. So then I'll put it in the fridge and then I'll bust it out and I'll dice up some peppers. I'll dice up some, a little bit of onions. I'll put some avocado in there, squeeze a lemon, some toasted seeds, stir it up, and it's friggin' delicious. Right. Just that.
You know? So once you have the grain, you just build depending upon your preferences.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and so we got the grain, we got the dressing. Yeah. What else?
And for a salad, I've been making it for 25 years. Kale avocado salad is my go-to recipe that I always make for my family.
And do you drive the avocado into the kale?
Yep. So you're using that fat, acid, salt. So I'm doing sliced kale, I'm doing avocado, I'm doing a little bit of acid lemon, and I'm using a little bit of like a diced bell pepper or cherry tomatoes as that sweet and a little bit of salt to it. And then you're massaging it, and you're basically making a guacamole with kale in it.
Yeah.
And then from there, you can add grains to it, you can add beans to it, you can add toasted seeds to it, you can add other vegetables to it. And it's one of those, like my little 2-year-old started eating it recently and I'm like, yes, I was so excited, you know, and it hits all those taste profiles. So it's hard not to like, you know, and anyways, I love those are my three sort of go-to. I'll always stick with a dressing or a marinade. I'll always work with grain salads again, that can incorporate beans or not.
Yeah.
And then a kale avocado salad.
What's your favorite go-to potato?
My go-to, I like a red russet. I like a red russet. So because they roast, and what I'll do is,
wow, I never would have guessed that.
So I like sweet potatoes too, but like the small red russets is really, really small.
What about
small
Yukon
ones.
Gold? So
Yukon Golds are good if I'm using.
They're really buttery and
they are, but they're drier than the others. So if I'm making like a gnocchi, you want to look for a dry potato. So I use Yukon Golds only for gnocchi most of the time. But with a russet, like this really small little popper potatoes, what I'll do is the best way to roast a potato, and I do roast potatoes a lot, is if you get those small potatoes, I always boil them first, okay? You don't boil them in boiling water. You add the potatoes to the pot, then turn it on, okay? Mm. That way it cooks all the way through. Mm. And so I'll boil them just so you can stick a fork in them, not till they're fully done, but just parched, basically, poached. And so I'll take it out, I'll boil them for maybe 5 minutes, strain them, cool them, and then I'll have that in the fridge. So if I want to do roasted potatoes, you put it on a super high heat, you slice them, put them on parchment paper, it crisps on the outside. You can put them on a really high heat and it cooked, and it's already cooked already, right?
Do you have a favorite potato for like doing potato wedges or french fries on parchment paper?
Yeah, sweet potatoes or a russet. I mean Japanese sweet potatoes are kind of a treat. I like to mix those into different russets. The only thing is like I'll keep them on separate sides of the tray because they cook differently, you know, so, and then I'll mix them for the kids, you know. So
I'm gonna ask you two questions. So first, you're having a carnivore over for dinner, you want to win them over to like you know, to the good side. Any particular meal that you're going to make for him?
Homemade manicotti. Or pasta, a pasta dish.
Yeah. Well, tell me about the manicotti.
Manicotti uses some fat there, but I would do it for using any kind of pasta.
Well, we're working with a carnivore here, so I want you to pull out all the stops.
All right, so if I'm making a fresh pasta, I love making fresh pasta. It's a labor of love. So making fresh pasta, a lot of people typically reach for eggs. Basically, eggs are used for functionality of pasta, so I mimic that with plants, right? So the functionality of an egg is... it's using the fat and the protein, giving it enough and a ratio to make that pasta pliable, right? So I'll do silken tofu and a little bit of vegan butter or a little bit of oil, right? Yeah. And you make that egg just like that's the egg. And then you mix that in the pasta and you knead it and all that. There's all sorts of recipes out there. In our Wicked Healthy book, we go into that recipe.
You make your own pasta.
Make my own pasta, but or dumplings. Dumplings is a good one too. So you can put anything in a dumpling. Okay, so basically you can buy dumpling skins from your local Asian market or specialty store. You can make your own if you wish. But one of my favorites right now, it's been all summer still, is our corn dumpling from our Wicked Healthy Cookbook, which is basically a combination of fresh blanched corn. Or you can use frozen, and then corn powder. And I use corn powder from using freeze-dried corn. Mm. So you can get the crunchy freeze-dried corn. You blend that up into a powder. You get this, and so you mix that with the corn puree, and it's like this corn, incredible burst of corn flavor, you know, these dumplings. So corn dumplings in a coconut broth, that's also a good go-to. So.
Okay, second question.
Or mushrooms.
Okay. You and your buddy Woody Harrelson, right? Yep. You're going to Station 72 in the Bronx. You're going to hang with Joe and his buddies there.
Yep.
So what's Woody's favorite meal that you'd cook for him and the firefighters?
I mean, he loved his pastas. He loved, the stuffed mushrooms, I remember. I haven't cooked for him in many years. We're just, we've remained friends. But I would say that something with a lot of flavor forward. Even the Thai route of using a lot of aromatics and spice and things like that. That's a good way to someone who's like used to the comfort of, that they think that meat brings them in bold flavors. You know, approaching a menu with a ton of bold flavors, and Thai and Vietnamese does it so well with like all the different herbs and the chilies and the combination of the sweetness and the richness and the acid and, and all of those hit all the buttons with flavor interest, and so it wakes up anybody's palate, so something that was definitely bold flavor I would serve.
You've been doing this 30 odd years. I mean, maybe you can't tell me, maybe you can, but who's the most famous person that you've ever cooked for? Because I heard,
so famous,
I heard from a little birdie, somebody that you cooked for at their house not too long
ago. Oh, yeah.
And that to me was
pretty amazing. That was pretty amazing. Yeah, Arnold. Arnold Schwarzenegger was pretty cool. I was pretty starstruck by him. And, I've worked with a lot of celebrities in the past of cooking, and a lot of them on film sets with Woody.
What did you make for Arnold?
I was working with this chef to help them adopt more plant-based techniques within his menu. So right. I ended up coming in. So it was kind of like a kitchen nightmare situation, but it turned out really well. So I flew into LA on a Sunday. My training was supposed to be Monday. Fly in at like, let's say 2 or 3 in the afternoon. I talked to the chef as soon as I landed, and I was supposed to be doing a training with him and then dinner for Arnold or something on Monday, something like that. I didn't know the details, but I flew in, and now the chef has become a really close friend of mine. But
so he didn't have a big attitude. He's
so awesome.
Yeah. Did you find that most good chefs don't have an attitude?
Most good chefs don't have an attitude. Right. The chefs that are just like hiding behind ego are the ones that have the attitude that their shit don't stink and they can't eat plants because it's not cool. Right. That's whatever. Right. As far as I'm concerned, those chefs are lazy and they're chasing after the train right now, at this point.
All right. The train has left the station.
They're chasing, man. So dinner was, so I call him when I land, and I'm, figuring out how I was going to shop that day and come over the next day. And he's like, you know what? Arnold's not going to be here on Monday, so we can still do a training, but can you do dinner tonight? He's having 10 of his friends over. And so this is at like 2, I'm landing at getting my bags, and I'm like, sure. He's like, well, it's because it's a great time, and it was Golden Globes that night.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm like, he's having a couple of his friends, closest friends over, so I can't miss a missed this opportunity.
Sylvester Stallone.
So it was like a total blitz to like go shopping. And what he wanted to learn was, what the chef wanted to learn was all the alternatives on the market. So a lot, showcase all my favorite products on the market and then work with as simple as, you know, how to mimic dairy and meat. That was main focus. And so I used some products in the market, but I did that mushroom technique with a number of things. And then also made showed him fresh pasta and then also non-dairy, all the non-dairy category, but also made some homemade milk and cream sauce and things like that. And show it was, so we ended up serving. So it, and we ended up pulling it off. It was 10 people and, they had, I think it was 12 things on the menu that we
did. You come out before each thing and explain what it was and all that.
Yeah. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. And that was one of those times where, you know, meeting Arnold was, I mean, he's like a real life superhero, you know, like he's, you know, him and Sylvester Stallone and, you know, all the, back in the day when we grew up, like they were superheroes, man, in our eyes, you know? So I've met a lot of celebrities, but I was just kind of starstruck when I saw him. The other one is when I was on set with Woody years ago, was Lauren Bacall. Lauren Bacall was married to Humphrey Bogart back in the day. And like Lauren Bacall is a legend and she was such a difficult woman, I'm sure, to work with, but she loved my shepherd's pie. Like a shepherd's pie for Woody, and he would bring it to her, and you know, it was just amazing.
Shepherd's pie sounds like so, absolutely amazing.
Oh, that sounds great right now. Oh,
it does. I would
love that right now. I'd
love it, shepherd's pie. So you cook all the time. You go home. Do you have the wherewithal to like cook your meals at home, or is your wife doing that?
I love cooking. I just love cooking. Cooking's not in a cooking is my passion. It's just like someone who's into fitness or someone, I mean, they just love it all the time. You know, it's not a chore.
Does your wife like to cook?
No, not she. That's why I think she married me. No, but she, I love to cook. Even if she wanted to cook, I'd say, no, let me do this. Because I love it. I love being able to feed my family. I think it's an opportunity and it's a true blessing to be able to understand the food that I put in my children's bodies, you know, and know every step of it.
What an amazing skill to have too. And it seems like a skill that the vast majority of Americans
don't
understand, don't have a passion for.
It's about confidence though. You know, if you're, as soon as you're confident in the kitchen, then you're sitting in the driver's seat of your own health. That's what I feel. You know, as soon as you take control of your health, in the kitchen, it reflects everything else in your life.
I like that. So, how many kids do you have?
Two
kids. Are they plant-based?
They are. Yes. I have a little vegan boy and my 13-year-old daughter is plant-based at home. Well, she's plant-based all the time, but she eats some dairy when she's out and about with her friends at events or whatever, but she only eats vegan at home. Right. It's all I've ever cooked. It's all we have in the house, so nobody has a choice. If you're going to come over and you're going to eat, nothing else is getting cooked in my pans, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, like you, I've got kids. I've got three kids, and they've been, you know, plant strong since since birth.
Yeah,
and they love it. They absolutely love it.
Yeah. And they're certainly not deficient. They're vibrant, beautiful children. And you see these, and they're a ball of energy, almost too much energy at times, you know. So
I hear you there. So you and I have seen this movement explode over the last decade. I mean, to a level that is just kind of like, it makes my head spin a little bit.
Completely.
In a great way. Completely. Right? So from your vantage point, what are some of the most exciting things going on in your world right now? And where do you see, and this is a big question, but where do you see the plant-based movement going over the next 5-10 years?
Oh my gosh, someone asked me that too the other day. I would say the most exciting thing that I have going on right now is we're creating, and I say that we, my brother and I, and it's, we are instruments of all the people that have influenced along the way, you know, and all the knowledge. So I don't want to take credit for what we're doing, but we're in the center of this incredible movement right now from a culinary standpoint and from a retailer standpoint. So of like what manufacturers are out there creating. Wiki Kitchen, we just rounded the corner and sold our 10 millionth meal the other day. We've been on market for a year and a half.
That's like insanity.
A year and a half, and we've sold 10 million plant-based meals with Wicked Kitchen. So that basically,
this is only over in the
UK. So we have an exclusive line with Tesco called Wicked Kitchen. Derek is over in UK leading that. He's the head of plant-based innovation for Tesco, but Tesco also licensed our brand Wicked Kitchen, which is a kind of a subsidiary of Wicked Healthy, and it's basically ready-to-eat meals, wraps, sandwiches, pizzas, rice bowls, noodle bowls, salads, you name it, little pots of food, protein pots, things like that. We have some desserts that are coming out. We have 40 products on market in Tesco. We launched at 20, and within a year, they doubled the line, which is incredible. And so we have some very exciting line extensions coming out in the next 3 months as well. And we're in, you know, over 1,000 stores, 40 products, and we've hit 10 million mark a couple weeks ago, which are 10 million meals. That's 10 million meals that do not contain animal products. Yeah. That gives me the chills, you know, just being a part of something like that. And so that's just the UK side of things with Wicked Healthy. Good Catch Foods, which we created here, which is a solution to really helping our oceans, you know, and making people recognize that there are alternative proteins out there that you don't have to reach for fish.
So this is sustainable seafood, right?
It's the most sustainable seafood on the planet because it's made out of beans. You know,
beans, not mushrooms. Is it
beans? It's all of Good Catch.
So we're not using any of the lobster mushrooms or anything like that.
No, it's a slightly processed product, of course, but it's the environmental piece and the environmental impact that it has is outweighs that personally. So
I had some samples at the Expo West trade show when I saw you.
Yeah.
I mean, the flavor profiles that you're creating,
texture, and
I mean, it's just like, I'd say that it's the equivalent in seafood to what Beyond Meat has done with their burgers.
It's an exciting time. So we have 3 products in market right now. We should be in about 3,000 doors by the end of this year, within a couple months. We launched with Whole Foods. We have 3 shelf-stable tuna-free products, it's a 6 legume blend. And then we use seaweeds and algae and DHA oil. So nutritionally, it holds up almost identical to an albacore tuna, and it's shelf-stable. So there's no other plant proteins that you can grab off the shelf and kind of travel with, throw in your gym bag or travel, you know. So I'm going camping tomorrow, like for the week, and I have a bunch of Good Catch, you know. Because I can, I can just put it on a salad. I can put it on a pasta bowl, whatever. It's amazing.
When you say it's shelf stable. How's it packaged? Is it in?
It's in a tear open bag. It lives right next to the tuna in the tuna aisle. So that flexitarian shopper has that option to diversify their protein. If rather than reaching for fish, they get a legume based one. So we're launching that. We're in a Series B right now. We have an amazing raise happening. We have amazing excitement behind it, and. What excites me the most is the impact and disruption that this product is going to have. And I think that that's what also drives us. We're activists at heart, and disruption of a category is what we're all about. Mm-hmm. It's about time that we're in a point with plant-based innovation right now that what we create has the opportunity to disrupt a category that has been around harming America's health and the world's health and the ocean's health and the land health. It's for many, many, many years. And that's a goal, is disrupting the factory fishing industry. And we're certainly going to do it. We're set out to do that. So
I don't have any doubt.
You know, so.
What about the movement? Where do you see us going in the next 5-10 years?
Oh man, I mean, just looking at just the past 18 months even. I mean, before it was like, 5 years, things have grown, 10 years, things have grown. Looking at the exponential growth of the plant-based category within, and I'm not talking like the medical side and the health side and the fitness side, that's not even my world, right? And that's blowing up, you know, and it's all on these parallel paths of like, I don't think people are going to stop eating meat. I think people are voting with their dollar, you know. I mean, the consumer demand right now for plant-based options from everything from fast food to retailers to high-end restaurants, it's no longer going to be this like fringe diet. And it is not now, you know. I mean, more and more restaurants are taking on, but you can go to, I'm shocked at a restaurant if it doesn't have a vegan option, you know. And I see there being just options out there in every category, in every food service sector.
Right.
And every, you know, whether you're on an airplane, whether you're in, you know, at a stadium, at a game, like I see vegan options.
Alamo
everywhere.
Draft House, movie
everywhere.
Theater.
Yeah, everywhere. So it's hard to say where it's going to be in 5 years because it's grown so much beyond our capacity to understand in the past 18 months.
I just read yesterday in the UK, KFC has introduced this imposter burger.
Yeah.
And they sold out in 4 days.
They sold out, yeah. That's crazy. Tesco is getting rid of their meat and seafood counters. because they're going to some packaged foods in those departments, but they're seeing such a demand for plant-based that the whole shift of retailers are shifting around, you know, wow, of what they're selling and the planogram of the store. And, you know, I was just in HEB, which is a local grocery store, as you know, and they had and it said meat section above it, and it was all vegan meats in the frozen department. All vegan meats in the conventional. I was blown. I was like, what the heck? Yeah. I mean, it's mind-boggling how quickly things are happening, especially is when there is plant-based options. Not saying they're the healthiest options, these processed products, but they're turning the public on to what's possible, and that you don't have to rely on animal suffering for our appetite, right? But when you see these fast food middle America that are on every corner of middle America serving, you know, the Burger Kings, you know, Impossible's rolling out in 7,000 Burger Kings across the United States in September. It's a plant-based burger, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
So it's, when that tipping point happens, like we don't even know how to project what's going to happen in 6 months with this movement. It is so incredibly exciting from a business standpoint, from an innovation standpoint, from a health standpoint, you know, from a fitness standpoint, from all of it. It is such an exciting time that it's so hard to say when that tipping point happens, what the next step's
going to
be.
And then another thing to add to the whole, you know, momentum is we got the Game Changers coming out, you know, in a couple months.
That's going to hit so hard. We're very excited about that. It's going to be the most, I would say, the most influential film to
hit. It will be the most watched documentary on the face of the planet.
Yeah, hands down, to this without point. A doubt.
This has been fantastic.
Thank you, brother, for having me. Your
breadth of knowledge on this subject is nothing short of impressive, and I want to thank you for everything you've shared with the audience. I think there's a lot of great value that you imparted, and I know I'll be seeing you around because we run in the same circles. So
we do.
Peace.
Let's get together more often.
Engine 2, keep it plant strong.
Thanks so much, brother.
Thank you. I want to thank my co-creator of the podcast, Scott Battisil and 10% Media, Lori Kordowich, producer extraordinaire, and the Engine 2 director of events, Bumble Media for this podcast production, and Brandon Curtis for everything in between. Thanks to Whole Foods Market for believing in me and giving me a platform for the last 10 years. Special thanks to Joe Inga, our Bronx firefighter, for your courage to not only change your life, but also allowing us to share your story along the way. And lastly, I want to thank my father and mother, Dr. Cobble B. Esselstyn Jr. and Anne Cryle Esselstyn, as well as all the Plant Strong pioneers who have been pushing this boulder uphill for more than 3 decades. As they say, we are standing on the shoulders of giants. And remember, if you're digging the show, please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. And with that, let me say, peace, Engine 2, keep it plant strong. I want to personally invite you to join me and all the other Brock stars for this year's 13th live and in-person Plant Stock event outside of Asheville, North Carolina, in the little town of Black Mountain. It's 1,500 acres, is loaded with wildlife, trees, trails, streams. It is a nature wonderland. And what's also a wonderland are all the incredible speakers that you get to hang with all weekend long, like Jane and Ann Esselstyn, Dr. Will Bolshewitz of Fiberfueled, Carly Bodrug, Miss Plant U, Dr. Gemma Newman is over from the UK. We have Dr. Dawn Musalem from the Mayo Clinic, John Mackey, the ex-CEO of Whole Food Market Stores, myself, Brian Hart, and a special appearance by the Plant Bros. And here's the kicker. All these Brock stars are there from Friday till Sunday, and they want to rub elbows with all of you, whether it's over buffets of Plant Strong fare for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, whether it's going on an afternoon hike, a swim, pickleball, frisbee golf, kickball, cornhole, dancing, we're having live music. It's all there in this fun weekend extravaganza that we affectionately call PlantStock. Simply go to liveplantstrong.com and then click on PlantStock 2024 and grab yourself a ticket before they sell out. See you there.